This podcast is part of Mishmash Media. Hey, buddy.
Hey, how's it going?
Very good. Welcome to another episode of Curbcast. This is a podcast where we review every single episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm in chronological order, scene by scene. We're watching them for the very first time. My name is Ivan.
And I'm Stephen.
And we are up to Season 7, Episode 7, what some would consider a classic episode of Curb in the top 10 or 20 episodes of all time. And I tend to agree. I really love this one a lot. Probably my favourite of the season so far, Steve. The Black Swan.
Yeah, I really liked it too. I'd heard a bit about it. I think you'd mentioned last week or the week before, or the time before, because we had a little break between last week's episode and the previous, that this was a classic. So I did have high expectations and they were met.
And death was a huge theme, like a big theme in this episode. And I love how it kind of like, it's your typical Curb episode, but it kind of felt like, not like a murder mystery, but kind of like, you know, like a Hitchcock kind of film, you know, where someone kills someone by mistake or something goes wrong and they try and hide the evidence and stuff, and there's people snooping around questioning them. I kind of like that vibe. It's a bit different.
Yeah, a bit of a whodunit, but we all know whodunit. You know, even if we didn't know, I think it would be safe to assume that Larry had done it.
Yeah. Poor Kyoko, the Black Swan. They didn't deserve it.
No, I know. She was just protecting her territory, her eggs or something, and then she gets a fucking golf club to the head. Very brutal.
And all the feathers go flying.
Yeah. What surprised me as well is I think at least when they show Larry and his and the boys carrying the swan away to bury it, it looks like a real swan. You know, other times when the ground staff find it buried under the leaves, it looked fake. It looked like just a rubber swan or just a cheap prop. But I think when they picked it up to take it away from the murder scene, it looked real. So I'm thinking that they actually got, you know, a dead swan from a butcher or, I don't know, whoever
a butcher.
whoever trafficked dead swans. I don't know what those sort of people.
It could be
do,
a taxidermist, maybe. Maybe they taxidermed a black swan. Because Larry, I love how Larry just carries it by the neck and walks off with it.
So
Spartan. Nah, it was probably like a taxidermied one or something. But you're right, it did look pretty real when Larry picks it up.
Yeah, the other times it looked fake. I guess it was sort of obscured, you know, when it was under the leaves, and then when it's in the wheelbarrow in like the plastic, it's like a plastic bag or something.
When they bring
it back to the clubhouse. But yeah, I was surprised that they seemingly used a real swan.
Yeah, a swan and a butcher. That reminds me, I got to buy some swan drumsticks for dinner tonight. Maybe some swan breast fillets. thanks for reminding me, dude. Dive. I had no idea what to have for dinner.
Delicious. If you want to send us your swan recipes, you can. We have an email address, curbcastpod@gmail.com. We're on all forms of social media as well. Curbcastpod is our handle. You can find those details in the show notes. If you want to support us, that would be amazing. We have a Patreon, patreon.com/mishmashmedia. Which is the name of our soon-to-be, hopefully, a bit more established podcast network. For as little as $1 US a month, you can support us and get early access to Curbcast. And we are working on some bonus content, which will hopefully be out to you sooner rather than later. But we'll see. We've got busy lives. If you don't want to support us, though, financially, you can just tell someone who is in your life who likes Curb about us. You know, maybe a family or friend, a family member or friend, not a family. I mean, if there's a whole family, tell them too. But a family member or friend, if they like Curb or Seinfeld or anything that Larry or Jerry do, tell them about us.
You can tell Larry David's family all about us.
Yes, that's right.
I'm sure we'd get lots of numbers, lots of hits.
Yeah. And a lot of cease and desists.
Yes. Stop using clips from the show.
Exactly. Oops.
All right, buddy, let's get into it. Season 7, Episode 7 of Curb Your Enthusiasm. We have watched this for the first time, and we will review it for you. The Black Swan, aired in the US on HBO for the very first time on November 1st, 2009. In this episode, Larry is forced to cover his tracks after he accidentally causes the death of a country club member, Norm, a previous recurring character from earlier seasons. And Larry also kills the club's mascot, a Black Swan, in an act of self-defense. I got no trivia for this one, but let's get straight into it, huh?
Sure.
Scene 1. Larry, his dad, and cousin Andy are attending Larry's mother's grave. Larry observes that the word past, as in passed away, was misspelled as past, P-A-S-T. Larry's dad says that he did it to save $100. He says it was $50 per letter for the engravements, and he believes that both words have the same meaning. Larry and Andy are dumbfounded by this. Larry's dad says he didn't want to bother Larry about it, because it's a reference to when, I think season two, when Larry's mum died. Larry didn't know about it until several days later because his dad didn't want to bother him. So around that time, Larry's dad was taking care of all the arrangements.
Yeah, I mean, there's withholding information to not burden someone, but then there's also not telling someone that their mother had died. It's so considerate that it's almost evil in a way to not tell your son that you're our mother, that his mother had died.
I think we did, when we did the episode many moons ago, I think we did talk about that. It's like if a relative has died or your parents died, you need to know right away.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's a moral obligation to inform, you know, anyone who has a right to know, for sure.
Definitely. Larry asks his dad for the stonemason's details so he will get them to correct it, as he comments on why there's no phrases or adjectives on the tombstone, just, you know, random words. Larry's dad puts the flowers in front of the grave as Larry wonders how long they have to stay there. And the stonemason, we'll find out a bit later, a very interesting character, and doesn't like the Yankees, probably a LA Dodgers fan or something, I'd imagine. And he doesn't like Derek Jeter, says he's very overrated.
Maybe a Mets fan. I know there's a long-standing Yankees-Mets rivalry as well, even though they're from the same city, but I guess because they play in different leagues, there's a bit of a Mets-Yankees fan, fan rivalry, I think.
Mm.
I don't know enough. Yeah. I don't know enough about baseball, but it could be, Dodgers, Yankees, or Mets, Yankees. Who knows?
Ed the Stonemason just doesn't like the Yankees, and Derek Jeter in particular.
He could. Maybe he just doesn't like Larry, and because Larry doesn't like the Yankees, he doesn't like the Yankees.
I don't know. I don't think it's as deep as that, but maybe. Maybe he just doesn't like Larry at all. Well, we'll talk about it when that scene turns up. Larry is at the country club with Andy, Jeff, and Marty Funkhauser as Norm turns up to eat at a nearby table. The guys all order as Andy has a specific way of ordering food. He wants his bacon especially crispy. Larry says it's going to take a while to come out and they might have to go to the golf course a bit later while they wait for him. A friend of Larry's from New York named Jim goes up to Larry and says hello, and he says he's in town for a golf tournament and he's going back to New York in a few days, and he walks off. Marty wonders why Larry didn't introduce him to the group. Larry says he's from New York City and that they'll never see him again. And Larry says it's against social convention to meet and be introduced to every person you see in your life. Do you agree with Larry on this or no?
For the most part, I think I agree with Marty. You know, I understand why he's a bit upset. But, I mean, there have been times in my life where I've run into someone, you know, if I'm with, say, my partner, and I see someone for 10 seconds on the street and, you know, there wasn't even an opportunity to do an intro. If it's just a, hey, how you going? Good to see you. Bye. I wouldn't do it. But I think if the conversation goes on for any more than like 30 seconds or a minute, I think it starts to get a bit awkward. Even if it's not relevant, even if they're never going to see each other again, I think it's just polite.
Yeah, just to kind of say, this is my friend or whoever. Yeah.
Yeah. I've become friends with or had interesting conversations with people who have just been introduced to me, you know, without sort of, they've just sort of happened organically. So, you know, you never know what's going to happen from just a random introduction. So, you know, I think it's always just nice to do.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, Larry, I guess it's one of his unwritten laws and this one happens to be incorrect, or we don't necessarily agree with it.
No, I think it's circumstantial, but for the most part, I think an intro is in order, unless it's just, you know, a 10 second hi and bye and there's no opportunity to. I think you should. What about you?
I'm kind of in the same boat as you. I think even just like a quick, you know, hey, like if I see one of your friends, you're like, hey, you know, hey, Ivan, this is blah. Oh, hey, blah, I'm Ivan, you know, nice to meet you. Yeah. See you later. I think that's appropriate. Yeah.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
Yeah, I agree.
I always think about it. Well, I don't always think about it. I've never really thought about it beyond this conversation. But, you know, sometimes when, you know, you see someone or you meet someone, and, you know, you start to get wrapped up in the conversation and then you go, oh, by the way, sorry, this is my friend or, you know, whoever you're with.
Yes.
You know, John, you know, you sort of, you don't forget about them, but, you know, it's not immediate. You know, you're like, oh, sorry, I forgot to introduce you guys. This is blah and this is blah. I think when that feeling starts to come up of like, oh, shit, I've got to introduce them, or like when their presence, when they're just standing there watching you having the conversation and it starts to become a feeling of like, you need to introduce me now. I think that's like the critical point. I think that's when it becomes like, you have to do it.
Yeah. No, definitely. Yeah, you have to. Yeah. But I have been the recipient. Like, I have been like the friend of the friend. And there have been times where the friend has talked to his friend and never introduced me. It could have been like a 10 second, you know, hello or something. But I think it also depends on time frame as well. I think if it's like a quick, you know, 5-10 seconds, hey, how you doing? I got to go. Like, I think that's acceptable. You don't have to introduce your friend. But if you're going to be there for at least a few minutes having a good yak, then definitely you should introduce your friend.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Anyway, let us know what you think. Send us an email. Tell us about your etiquette when you have a, your own friend, when you see a friend. What do you do? A man named Mr. Takahashi berates Larry for using a cell phone in the dining area as Larry apologizes and makes up a story about his dad having surgery recently. Mr. Takahashi gives him a final warning and he walks off. Larry reveals he is the owner of the club, and this episode definitely dated it because, these days people pull out their phones, they show, Instagram photos, or they'll show TikTok videos to each other while, or they'll, watch YouTube or something while they're at a restaurant. Lots of people, very, antisocial with their phones. 2009, It was a social faux pas to even have a phone call at the dining area. Very different times.
Yeah, I mean, the idea of having a phone in every situation to film something or take a photo or something, or just, show someone something funny on Instagram or whatever. Yeah, it was still quite foreign. Phones weren't that useful, I guess. They were mostly still text messages and phone calls and maybe some photos. But yeah, so... yeah, it's interesting that just a phone call was considered socially unacceptable. I feel like Mr. Takahashi, though, even in this day and age where phones are pretty common, and unless it's like a solemn occasion or a place where people are quiet, most people don't really find a phone call that rude anymore. I feel like even now he would, though. He seems very like old school, and when you're in my restaurant, that's it. Like, you eat my food and you talk to your friends. Like, I don't think his rule is because of the time. I think it's because of him.
Yeah, because of his values. I could imagine he might have like signs, with like a circle with a phone in it with like a cross, like no phones allowed. We don't have Wi-Fi. Don't ask. He'll have stuff like that, I could imagine.
Yeah.
Right, 100%. Big signs at the front.
Yep, I agree.
No phones allowed. Everyone except Andy has finished eating their breakfast as Marty asks Andy to hurry up and finish so they can go to the course. They notice that Norm's group is leaving first because they wanted to be first on the course because they know that Norm takes a very, very long time to go through the holes. Larry offers to pay the bill and he complains about extra tips that have been highlighted on the bill as they all leave and head to the course. The waiter asks Larry if he tipped enough, and Larry reminds him of the 18% tip and that he is protesting any additional tips. And Larry says, he doesn't mind paying extra tips, but just don't make me do math on the table. Like, don't make me add like 2 or 5%. Just say straight out 20%, 25% tip. Just don't do this 18 plus additional, because I don't want to do math while I'm eating, which is a good point.
I mean, after you've finished eating, all you want to do is sleep, or you don't want to use your brain. So I kind of get his point.
Yeah. Or just get the waiter to bring a calculator out or something.
Yeah.
And just calculate the difference. But this waiter, not the last time we see him in this episode. He pops up a few more times. The gang are waiting on the course for Norm to move on, and he's taking a very long time. Larry yells at him for taking too long as Norm berates him. They all jump in the golf cart and Larry tells them that they're leaving, and they tell Norm to go fuck himself, and Norm tells them to go fuck themselves as well. It's a big heated argument as Larry and the gang ride off.
Hey, Norm, drop a ball.
Ah!
You've been looking for 20 minutes. Just drop a ball.
I haven't been looking for 20 minutes.
You can't hold up the whole course like this. Let us play through.
You don't play through. Out of the question.
It's not right. It's very inconsiderate.
I'm not inconsiderate. You're inconsiderate.
You're inconsiderate.
No,
you're
inconsiderate. You want to do me a favor?
Yeah.
You shove it up your ass.
Are you happy? Are the onions? Huh?
They're all in the dressing room. Another patron yells at Larry for yelling at Norm, and he says that Norm has high blood pressure and that yelling at someone with it can kill them. He adds that Norm is actually dead as they all look on in horror. What an odd dialogue choice. You think like he would have just come out and said, guess what you did, Larry? Norm's dead. And then he would have probably explained the whole blood pressure situation. But he just like casually says, what happens to people who have blood pressure? And then Norm, he happens to be dead. Comedic.
He kind of buried the lead, didn't he?
Yeah, it's almost like black comedy, isn't it? It's almost like, you see what happens, blah, blah, blah. Oh, by the way, they're dead. It's like, oh.
Yeah. You think?
Very like Monty Python, esque. I could imagine a sketch from Monty Python or something like that. It's like you explain all these problems that the guy has, and then suddenly, oh, by the way, he's passed now. He died like a minute ago.
Yeah. You're leaving out the most important detail.
Exactly. The scene-changing detail, yeah. Larry says that it's not his fault. The man says that he has heard many stories about Larry at the club as he walks off, and we do know that Norm is kind of like an adversary to Larry, especially at the course, at the club, and they've had a few run-ins in the past. So, there's lots of ammo to kind of link Larry with Norm's death. Makes sense that he's the prime suspect. Marty says that Larry is, straight out, he says he's a murderer. Jeff says it was involuntary manslaughter, and Andy agrees with Marty and says that Larry did indeed murder him. And Larry asks when they're playing golf next, just casually. He's being accused of murder, and he's like, oh, so when are we playing next? Oh, early tomorrow morning. Okay, great. Larry just kind of eventually just brushes it off. He's like, yeah, whatever. I didn't murder the guy.
Golf is the center of his universe.
It is, yeah. He doesn't care. But obviously, you know, Larry didn't murder him, obviously. He didn't have intent to kill him. He just, you know, said a few words and yelled at him, and that's it. So not his fault.
Yeah, even if he didn't murder someone, or if it was just an unfortunate result of, you know, an argument, he still doesn't care. I mean, the fact that some guy died, even if you're enemies, I don't know, I wouldn't be thinking about when are we playing golf next, even if I wasn't responsible. It's just, yeah, it doesn't matter that he killed him or not. Just the fact that he doesn't care about the fact that he's dead at all.
Yeah, I know. That's how much he hates Norm. He has no mercy for his enemies. None. Doesn't give a fuck.
Doesn't care.
Doesn't care. Nope. Larry is having dinner with Larry's dad, Andy, and Andy's wife, Cassie, as she said that she sold the stonemason who Larry's going to talk to a hat. She shows off one of her hats, which is a pink cowboy one. Larry offers to pay for their daughter, Skylar, her college fund, which shocks the couple, and the couple eventually say yes and thank him very, very much. Cassie says that she'll make Larry a thank you hat, and Larry says, no, don't bother, you don't have to do that. He doesn't want one of her goofy hats. Larry goes to answer the phone, and it's the stonemason. His name is Ed, and Larry asks him to change the inscription on the tombstone. Andy yells out who the Yankee on Seinfeld was, which was very interesting, because there was quite a few Yankees on the show. I'm a bit surprised. Mm. I thought Larry was going to say, which one? There's been, like, what, five of them?
Yeah, that has actually Keith Hernandez, a whole bunch.
Yeah, a whole bunch as well. Yeah, I think Keith Hernandez. Yeah, yeah. Well, I think he was in the Mets, but yeah, Keith Hernandez was definitely a baseball player. I'm pretty sure. I don't know if he was a Yankee, but yeah. Yeah, there was Derek Jeter, and there was those ones with George, you know, in the baseball bat, you know, with the machine, and he's like, oh, three games. Snort. Love it. Well, it was like six games. He says something like that. And he's like snorts and rolls his eyes. There's a few of them there as well. Andy asks who the Yankee on Seinfeld was, and Larry yells out that it was Derek Jeter. Ed overhears and says that Derek Jeter is one of the most overrated players ever, which irks Larry a lot. He tells Ed to take care of the stone as he hangs up the phone. So we had a theory earlier in the episode, Steve. He was either, possibly a New York Mets fan who, you know, happens to live in LA, or probably, you know, goes for the Dodgers or another kind of, I don't know, the other Californian baseball teams. I got no idea. I just know the Dodgers because I have a shirt of the Dodgers. When I was in LA, I got that. Yeah, that's the situation. So he obviously hates the Yankees with a passion. I'm mad. You know, he just hates them. And he hates Derek Jeter. And I think Derek Jeter was, from what I understand, of one of the best, like, players of that era. So pretty, you know, the fact you're calling him overrated, that's obviously he's having a dig at Larry, and his bias is clearly showing.
Yeah, doesn't like Larry, doesn't like the Yankees, and he's just trying to stir him up.
It's like in ice hockey, Wayne Gretzky, overrated. Boxing, Muhammad Ali, overrated. You know what I mean?
Terrible.
I know, it's just definitely bias in there. He probably knows that Jeter was one of the greats, but he doesn't want to admit it.
Nah.
The boys are back on the golf course the next morning, and they're shocked at how quiet it is compared to normal, and they're able to get through all their holes quite comfortably. Jeff says that they are at hole 12. That was the one where Norm had his heart attack on. Larry slices his shot, and it is at the bank on the grass, which is near a pond full of white swans. Larry goes to hit his ball near the pond. He spots a black swan on the hill. It looks at Larry and it runs towards him. Larry hits it, feathers go flying, and he kills it in one blow with his, I'm guessing, probably like a four, like a three iron or something. I don't know. It was definitely an iron, I reckon, that killed it. The scene cuts to the gang as Larry is explaining what happened. Jeff says that the swan, of course, is Mr. Takahashi's pet and the love of his life. Larry says they have to hide what happened and not tell anyone. Andy says that he has to tell Cassie about this. He tells her everything. They convince him not to do it. They go pick up the swan. Larry grabs it by the neck to go bury it in the woods. So yeah, they're all like, you know, complicit, and you know, the consequences will be very dire if they're found out to be the black swan killer. So yeah, they gotta go hide it. Very lazy from the boys. I mean, they just put it under some leaves. Obviously they should have known that someone was gonna find it. I thought they would have at least made an effort to kind of, you know, dig like a small grave for it or something.
Yeah,
or I mean, maybe they just didn't have the tools for it.
Yeah, they kind of are the Four Stooges, and they're a bit dumb. So, you know, especially when they're together. So it doesn't surprise me that they did a pretty terrible job.
I like how Jeff is very in this episode for everything involved with the black swan. He's very standoffish. Have you noticed that? He's kind of like the most passive of the four. Like, the other three are like talking, but Jeff's kind of like, I don't want to be involved in this.
Yeah.
He's kind of like, oh, fuck. If Susie finds out I'm dead, basically.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he can't really get himself involved because there will be more of a chance of him being found out that he's not at the office.
Oh, that's right. Yes, he did. Oh, that's right. When Andy says that he tells his wife everything, that's right. Jeff says that he told Susie that he's in the office. That's right. Yes, good point. Good pickup. Yes. So, yeah, he'll be in a lot of trouble if he's not in the office. And especially with his past discretions, Susie might think the worst of him.
He does say he only tells Susie he's playing golf when he's with a woman. So, yeah.
Ah, yes. That's very true. Very true. So, yeah, maybe she'll find out, you know, she'll associate him literally playing golf with being with a woman, and Jeff won't be able to get out of it. I mean, he has committed adultery again this season earlier on with Bam Bam. So, yeah, and he somehow got away with it by some miracle. So, yeah, he's a sneaky fellow, old Jeffy.
Web of lies.
The web of lies, and he'll get caught in it one day. It'll happen. The gang are in the dining area having lunch, and they notice the Black Swan has the club logo, and it's also adorning things like the napkins, yeah, the tablecloths, everything has the Black Swan on it. Obviously, Mr. Takahashi loves his swan so much that he made it a logo of the club. Marty feels very uncomfortable being there and that he wants to leave. Larry reminds Marty that swan killers leave and non-swan killers stay. And he says that they should all enjoy the atmosphere, otherwise they will, I should say, arouse suspicion. Marty reminds Larry of the phone rule, as in, you know, don't answer your phone at the dining table, as Larry threatens Marty and slams his knife into the table, which scares Marty. So all these kind of, you know, these traits that Larry's exhibiting, he's threatening people, he's putting knives into tables and stuff, you know. He's trying to say he's not a murderer, but he's kind of acting like someone who'd murder.
Yeah, it's a bit intense.
Yeah, very intense, yes. The golf course cleaners spot the Black Swan under some leaves in the woods next to the pond. The scene cuts back to the gang as the tension is heating up amongst all of them. They spot the cleaners bringing the swan, which is, I think it has like some, yeah, like you said, some kind of plastic over it. It's in a wheelbarrow. Mr. Takahashi, in the distance, he opens the plastic, notices it's Kyoko, the Black Swan. He starts crying and tells them to take the swan to the clubhouse as they all look on in shock. Larry tells the group it was all in self-defense, and others say it was just a bird, like, who cares? An associate of Mr. Takahashi's calls all four of them into his office. They're all lined up waiting for interrogation, and Mr. Takahashi shows them the tea sheet of who was playing at the time of the swan's disappearance. And he says everyone was paying respects to Norm and didn't go play golf out of respect, and he wonders why they weren't playing when they should have been grieving over Norm. Mm-hmm. Takahashi asks who killed Kyoko, which is the Black Swan. He first interrogates Andy. He says that he denies that he is involved. Mr. Takahashi offers Marty free dues and other perks if he calls out who did it. Marty says that he still doesn't know. So, yeah, so Takahashi offers him free dues for the lifetime his membership, and Marty's like free valet parking, all that kind of stuff. And, yeah, I guess he still has a soft spot for Larry. He doesn't rat Larry out. So it goes to show that he still, despite everything Larry has done to Marty over the seasons, Marty still has a soft spot for him.
I think it's also he doesn't want to be known as the rat amongst his friends. It's not just Larry. I think it's just his standing within the group too.
Oh, yeah, he has lots of integrity, supposedly.
Yeah,
he's a very honest man.
Yeah, and I think you know, his other friends would hold it against him that, you know, you said we're all in it together.
We're all in it together, yeah. We're all in the shit. We got to get out of it.
Yeah.
Even though he could have got literally thousands of, maybe tens of thousands of dollars worth of perks for the rest of his life, he gave it all up. Good for him.
Yeah.
He's got some integrity.
Yeah.
Good for him. He interrogates Jeff and he mocks Susie. So Takahashi knows about Susie. He mocks Jeff's wife. And Jeff goes along with it as he goes to Larry and he asks if he killed Kyoko. And he does a trademark stare down on Larry. So Takahashi, he's in on the stare downs. Larry's phone starts ringing about 5 seconds into the stare down, disrupting it. And Larry answers the phone and Mr. Takahashi dismisses them all. So wow, the phone actually saved Larry this time. If he didn't have the phone, then maybe Takahashi would have done enough of a stare down to be convinced it was Larry. Saved him.
Yeah, kind of broke their stare off.
So there you go. So what Takahashi didn't want, Larry wanted in that moment, and it saved him. So good on Larry. Lucky for him.
Larry, how are you?
Good.
Yeah. You kill Kyoko?
No.
Yeah.
No. I can't talk now. I'll call you back. No servo in the clubhouse. Rest warning. Now go.
Larry is in his bedroom. He tells Andy about Norm's memorial and funeral over 2 days. He says 2 days of mourning is worse than playing golf behind Norm. Almost as bad. Andy thanks Larry for his offer about Skylar's college fund. He tells Larry that Cassie wants to go through cosmetology school and if Larry can fund it. Larry is put off by this as Cassie walks in. Larry says he's already made a gesture for their daughter and he doesn't want to do any more for them. Cassie implies that Larry kills swans and that they're not swan killers themselves. They kind of like blackmailing, I guess.
Yeah.
Andy says that Cassie will keep quiet about it as Larry threatens them. He says he will destroy all of her hats if she talks. As they all go into an argument as Cassie walks out of the door. So Andy already told Cassie, obviously, but it sounds like they're trying to take advantage of Larry in this situation because Larry's offered their daughter college, but Cassie's like, oh, she's probably not going to go to college anyway. I definitely want to do cosmetology.
Yeah, I think they've got that over on Larry and they just want to get something more from it.
And they're hoping that the black swan would be like supposedly the black male for Larry. If you don't pay for my cosmetology school, I'll rat you out, basically. But Andy swears her to secrecy. Because Andy's Andy's in on it too. So, you know, even though Larry might get in trouble, Andy's complicit. So he'll be an accomplice. Yeah. So he'll get in a lot of shit too. Larry is at Norm's memorial and he sees Marty. There's a man standing next to Larry. Larry talks ill of Ed the Stonemason. And he's saying lots of bad things about him, calling him an asshole and all that kind of stuff. The man next to Marty reveals that he is Ed the Stonemason. Larry asks what he's doing here, and Larry says he's done both of Marty's parents' headstones, and he's doing Norm's headstone, and that he will do Larry's headstone. Ooh. as he walks off. Oh boy. Ed's not happy about it. Larry asks Marty why he didn't tell him who he is, and Marty says he stuck with Larry's no introduction policy and didn't introduce him. Oh, that's so good. So good.
Yeah, I did like how Larry accepts it and he's like, hoisted by my own petard.
Yes. He's like, fair enough. Fair enough.
Yeah, he doesn't have anything. You know, normally Larry's got, you know, he'll try and like weasel his way out of something or like, I don't know. He never just accepts things that he's lost. But this time he's like, yep, you got me.
You got me this time. You got me with my own rule. That's fair enough. Mm-hmm. I don't want to contradict myself.
Yeah, a rare moment of being humble for Larry.
Indeed, yes. One of those rare times. Larry shows Marty an email from Jeff saying that they should come clean about the swan. And I like how the email address is kind of blanked out. You can't see it. But very old style email. Very cool. And Jeff's basically saying, oh, you know, we got to give ourselves up, all this kind of stuff. We can't get away with this. And yeah, like I said, Jeff, he's very standoffish in this episode and he doesn't want anything to do with it.
Yeah, he doesn't seem like his normal self. Normally he's up for, you know, a bit of a scheme, but he's not keen to be involved.
I mean, a few seasons ago, he helped Larry, get the golf club from Marty's father, right?
Yeah.
So, you know.
But normally he's keen to sort of, you know, be, well, even if he's not keen, he's not afraid if he has to, you know, like if he's like, well, this is what I've got to do. He doesn't have a lot of fear or reluctance.
No, he doesn't.
I was going to say, maybe he's got a soft spot for swans or something, or, you know, maybe it's just the circumstance that he just, it's just too much for him or something. I'm not sure, but
he doesn't want to get kicked out of the country club.
Actually, probably that. You know, here I am trying to paint him as like an emotionally complex person, but let's just be honest, it's just golf.
He's a big man child, so I doubt it. Yeah. No, he just doesn't want to, he doesn't want his alibi, you know, to disappear, you know, when he's actually having sex with other women. He doesn't, because he won't be able to use the golf course alibi anymore. So he has to hold on to it.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's my theory. Golf, no.
Like I said, I was trying to like paint him as someone who's emotionally complex and has guilt over a dead bird, and you know, it's like disrespectful and tragic for Mr. Takahashi, but really it's just all about his golf. That's it.
Basically. The memorial begins and everyone sits down as Jeff turns up a little bit late and he sits next to them. The service is beginning. Larry's phone rings and everyone glares at him. He throws it away as Mr. Takahashi glares at Larry. The scene cuts to Larry after the memorial giving condolences to Norm's family. They accuse him of killing Norm as Larry tells him his theory about Norm's death and somehow linking the swan story to Norm, claiming that he had a heart attack right near the pond where Larry was as the swan may have tried to attack him. So he's trying to link both of them together so he can get off scot-free. He's like, the swan did it. The black swan tried to kill Norm. And then he killed it and then had a heart attack from the shot.
Yeah, he says it so intensely. honesty as well.
Yeah, I know. He's very convinced, isn't he? He's played the scenario in his head several times.
Yeah, I think so. But I don't think they're buying it.
Nah, definitely not. But he walks off and they don't say anything after that. The waiter from before looks through Larry's phone and he hands it to him. Larry suspects that he might have read... Larry, Marty, and Andy are at a table saying that the waiter surely read Jeff's email on his phone and that they are screwed. The waiter says... goes up to them and says that an 18% tip is included on their bill as he walks off. They are all convinced that it is a shakedown, so the waiter doesn't tell, Mr. Takahashi what happened. Larry decides to tip the waiter $500, so he shuts his mouth. The waiter is shocked at the tip amount, and he questions Larry about it, but eventually thanks him for his generosity as he walks off. Marty says to Larry that he thinks the waiter actually has no idea what Larry was talking about. And I think that's the case. Larry just gave $500 to some dude who has no idea what's going on.
Yeah, the waiter's like, sweet.
Yeah. You can tell, if he knew about the email, he'd kind of, because Larry's kind of giving him these signals saying, I know what you know and stuff. But the waiter's like, oh, no, I got no idea, but thank you for the $500. That means a lot. Thank you.
Yeah, Larry.
Doubt anyone in it would react like that.
Yeah, no, there'd be a bit of, yes, I'll keep my mouth shut, of course. I understand. Yeah, there'd be a bit of side eye and a bit of wink, wink, nudge, nudge. But the waiter's... clueless, and he's just thinking, cool, I've got $500.
Beautiful. That's a few days' pay? Not bad.
Yeah.
A few days' pay in 2009? Not bad.
Not bad at all.
Everyone is at Norm's tombstone at the same cemetery as Larry's mother, as Mr. Takahashi wants to talk to Larry. He praises him for the big tip he gave to the waiter, and he adds that someone generous like him surely would never kill a swan. And he promises to let bygones be bygones. Larry invites Mr. Takahashi to walk with him to his mother's grave. They walk together towards the other stone as they spot Ed, who's putting the finishing touches on Larry's mum's stone, and he briskly walks off. He says goodbye to Mr. Takahashi as Larry goes up to the tombstone. The stone now says, Mother of Larry, an asshole, and swan killer. Mr. Takahashi, who was walking to his car, was walking past, and Larry turns around and spots him with his arms crossed, standing behind him, realizing what the tombstone says. So Larry was caught. Perfect. I just love, because Takahashi was heading in that same direction to go to his car, and then he's right behind Larry. I love that shot where Takahashi's just got his arms crossed, glaring at him.
Yeah.
And Larry's it's funny. It's amazing how he can read it from so far away. Incredible eyesight.
Yeah, he does. He does. Yeah, I just love the, how he thinks he's kind of tricked Larry. Larry thinks he's good. He's gotten off with everything and that, Mr. Takahashi really likes him now. And it's all just a big ruse to show him his tombstone and humiliate him. Love it.
That's right. And Ed got his revenge finally.
Yep. Yeah. No, it was good.
Very.
And
very
look, considering good. Larry was, indirectly responsible for the death of one man and directly responsible for the death of a prized animal, a misgraven, is that a word? A tombstone that wasn't engraved correctly.
A misgraven? No, I've never heard that one.
Misgraven? I think I just made up a word. something with incorrectly engraved. Misgraven? I don't know.
Yeah, misgraven, mischiseled. Who knows?
Mischiseled?
I'll have to Google it.
Something like that.
I'll say mischiseled. Yeah.
Yeah, mischiseled. That's a word now. We're making it happen. Is. Yeah, considering what he's done in this episode, again, indirectly and directly, and the fact that he's, covering it up and, threatening people, erroneously engraved tombstone is not, is a pretty lenient punishment, I think.
I think so too. But yeah, mischiseled is the new schmohawk in the universe.
Because that's something he could just fix. He can just get a new gravestone. So it's not like a punishment that's permanent. It's just I'll just get a new one. It's a minor inconvenience at worst.
Yeah, I just think the fact that Takahashi saw it was probably that was the icing on the cake.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But yes, now he can just certainly just swap it out. He's good for it. If he can tip a waiter $500, he can afford another tombstone. That's no problem.
Oh, yeah.
But at least he can write it his own way, unlike what his dad wrote. So he can do it. He can spend $50 a letter and probably spend a few grand on it. Why not?
Yeah.
He can write whole paragraphs on it.
If my son was worth hundreds of millions of dollars, I would expect them to pay for the tombstone. I wouldn't be like, oh, geez, I better save $100. I'd be like, no, he can pay for it.
Exactly. $50 a letter, though. Oof. Rough.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I feel like engraving tombstones is one of those skills that is slowly dying. I have no data to back that up. Maybe it's not, but blacksmithery or horseshoe making or something like that. It's that old skill that not many people do, and people only do it as a passion, not as like a legitimate skill to make money.
Yeah,
I don't know. I feel like tombstone engraving is in that bucket or something like that. So, you know, maybe it's $50 a letter because it's a hard skill and there's not many people who do it.
Yeah. Who knows? Maybe in the future we'll have like an NFT tombstone or something. You know, we'll get buried on a plot of land and there'll be like a screen where the tombstone once was. And yeah, just be like an NFT.
Probably.
You know, a unique tombstone with unique wording worth, you know, 10 grand.
Some crypto fuckwit has probably tried to NFT tombstones or something, thinking that they're doing something. I don't know. I can just imagine some like crypto douche doing that for sure.
I believe, you know, I believe it. Yeah. Anyway, that's the end of the episode. The end music plays, yada, yada, yada. I love The Black Swan, Steve. My favorite episode of the season. 5 Larrys out of 5. I really enjoyed it. It was very well written. I love how like it kind of deviated from the Seinfeld, you know, story arc for this season. In fact, there was no mention. Actually, the only mention of Seinfeld was Derek Jeter. You know, when Andy asked what baseball player was on Seinfeld, that was literally the only reference to the show. And it was nice and refreshing to get away from that. And I really enjoyed the kind of whodunit, even though we know whodunit, you know, kind of style as well. It was refreshing. I really enjoyed it. I like Cousin Andy as well. It was good to have him back as well. And good cast. Good episode. Very good episode. Definitely worth 5 out of 5. What about you?
I don't know what it is, but for me, it's not like a perfect episode, but it's close to. So for me, it's like 4 3/4 Larrys.
Okay.
It's
4.75, yeah?
4.75 out of 5 Larrys, which is still very good, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, can't complain. But I was thinking, you know, this episode did feel a bit different. I think because it was in no familiar settings, you know, like there was nothing at Larry's house. There was nothing at Jeff's house. Like it was all either at the golf course or the, the funeral home or at Andy's house. Like it was, you know, it was mostly new or if not new, rarely seen settings, which I think kind of made it a bit different. And and also the tone of it and the storyline, you know, the storytelling, like how the episode played out was a bit different. And this felt like, you know, last week we were saying how the episode was really good up until when the cop pulled Larry over for stealing napkins. It just kind of got away from itself. It felt a bit too silly. They were trying to do something different. It just didn't work. This to me is the perfect example of let's try and do something different. Let's, you know, but it not being ridiculous. It was like the perfect example of breaking the mold, but doing it really well.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. Whenever there's a black swan, you know, you can certainly swing your golf club. That's very realistic.
Yeah.
If it's coming.
I think I liked in this episode as well, even though there were a few intertwining storylines, I would still call it a fairly simple episode. Like it was all just centered around the four of them and the golf course. And, you know, that was kind of the majority of it. But it didn't feel as simple as like a season one episode, but it didn't feel like super convoluted either. It was like a good balance between a lot going on, a lot of moving parts, but not too, you know, sometimes it just feels a bit like, you know, they should cut it down a tiny bit. Everything was balanced in this episode pretty much perfectly.
Yeah. I mean, last season, season 6, we commented that Curb really hit its stride. And we think that season 6 up until this point is the best season of Curb. Like nearly every episode just hit. But I feel like 7 is kind of up there, you know, like, you know, probably in the top 3 seasons of Curb. And just episodes like this that exemplify it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, this, I understand completely why this is a classic episode. It's really good. Really good.
Yeah. It's very, very well done. Classic. Almost like, you know, the same level as, you know, all the other classics we've reviewed. I can't think of it off the top of my head, but yeah, those ones. Just go back to my previous episodes. Level.
Yeah. Porno Girl, The Freak Book. To me, they're like some of the best ones.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely. Beloved Aunt from season 1. Yeah. All the classics. All the Doll, you know, from season 2. All those classics. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They're all amazing. And that's another episode of Curbcast. Thank you so much for listening. You can find us on any platform service. And we do have a Patreon page as well for $1 a month. You get this episode a few days earlier than everyone else. Patreon.com/mishmashmedia. These episodes come out every Friday morning Australian time. So a few Americans out there, probably like Thursday, I don't know. Maybe Thursday afternoon or something, but for you Aussies or anyone in the Southern Hemisphere or near us, very early in the morning. My name's Ivan.
And I'm Stephen.
And we'll catch you next week for Season 7, Episode 8 of Curb Your Enthusiasm. Take care of yourselves and each other. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. This podcast is part of Mishmash Media, an independent podcast network. Follow us on social media @MishmashMediaAU or support us on Patreon. All those links are in the show notes.